the corner, Berry.
Rick Berry has not missed a free throw against Washington. Now it is Berry. Back to Clifford Ray. Goes to Rick Berry.
Golden State getting that ball moving. Intended for Berry. Berry, look at that pass. Rick Berry, look at that shot, would you?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Berry wants to make a move. There's a Berry. He's got his shot.
Rick Berry here. Yes, the Rick Berry Show on Mic'd Up, and that's right. Earth Man himself, that's Cyber Satchis. He's been my cohort for a number of years, and we have been together for a while, but I think it's time to kind of take a look at the playoff game. A little disappointing. I'm wearing my Warriors stuff, no tears in my eyes. It's like unusual to be talking about playoffs without talking about the Warriors, because they've been such an integral part of the playoffs for so many seasons. But, you know, anyway, a disappointing end to their season when it looked like they may have turned around and could have done something, and they unfortunately just had a horrible game in their game against the Kings. And so here we are talking about all these other teams, but a lot of stuff going on, Cyrus, in the playoffs. Some very interesting matchups, some things that are a little bit not disconcerting to me, but the things that I'll talk about that I just sometimes shake my head in astonishment, because I watch the games and I listen to stuff. I always say, I just wonder, you know, are these people watching the same game I'm watching? I don't know.
Yeah.
Amazing. But let's talk about, you know, the big team in the right now. May as well get that out of the way. Yeah, the Boston Celtics kind of get a little overconfident after winning their first game and, you know, blew a game against the Heat, which I think was a shocker. You know, the Heat undermanned, pulling off a win in Boston Garden. You don't expect that to happen very often, or center, whatever the hell they call it. But they sort of took care of business and let everybody realize that, you know, this is a very formidable team. They've got a lot of depth. They have a lot of talent. And the big question is, how are they going to play when they come up against somebody that's maybe a little better match for them here as the playoffs move on? And how well two of their star players, talking about Brown and Tatum, play late in games? Because they, you know, Tatum especially has just not played particularly well over the last few seasons come playoff time, and they need in order to be able to. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays itself out, but they're a tough team. I mean, let's face it, that's the team that has to be beaten. Somebody's got to find a way to knock them off. It's going to be very difficult to do, especially if they play the way they played last night in that game. They just manhandled the Heat in that game, and so they should take care of business. So I don't think there's really much to talk about there. That series is, I think, going to go in favor of Boston. Miami may find a way to win another game, but I highly doubt it. Another Sixers. That's been a pretty highly contested series, and now we'll see if Philadelphia can even that series up. The Knicks were very fortunate. They could easily have lost one of those games if Embiid hadn't gone down for a while there in game one. That might have been an issue for them, but he's a heck of a player. These 7-foot guys out there playing like point guards is kind of crazy. Shooting the ball from 3-point range, putting it on the floor, bringing it up to court. It's really interesting to see that, you know, we'll talk about more about the at all later on when we talk about the LA and Denver series, but yeah, it's kind of fun to watch. This is going to be an interesting one. That one, of course, is on television coming up here this afternoon, going on right now. I know you got an update on it. I haven't really watched it. I usually read games and watch them later so that I can watch them at my own pace.
Right. It's on right now. It's 49-47 at the half. Sixers lead by two. Hell of a series. What did you think, by the way, about Joel Embiid? I mean, he's already dealing with the knee issue, and then apparently at a very young age, dealing with Bell's palsy. That's not normal. I think your wife dealt with that for a little bit at one point recently, right?
He got it from that stupid flu, you know, vaccination thing. And fortunately, that's kind of a bizarre thing. But, you know, I thought that they would give them a real battle and whoever had to play him, because he had rusted legs. But then, of course, he came up a little bit lame, got a little nicked up, and without him playing at his best, Philadelphia doesn't have a chance, I don't think, to beat New York. New York's a much improved team. They play the tough defense. They're doing a, you know, just, I mean, having a heck of a season. I mean, you know, the fans over there have gone a long time. It kind of reminds me of the Warriors fans going a long time with a big drought and not being able to do anything. But Brunson's had an amazing season. He's just playing his butt off.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the thing is if you have to rely on your big star to get 50 points to win all the time, that's a pretty difficult task to ask for anyone. So I think the big one here is if Philly doesn't win this game, it's over for them. They have any chance whatsoever.
And Rick, I don't know why this is like, and this is just maybe evidence of my demented mind, but every time I see a player like Jalen Brunson, my mind always goes back to how a team like the Mavericks just let him go for absolutely nothing. They tried lowballing him with contract negotiations, and they paid the price for that. And it's just evident. I don't know. It drives me crazy, the amount of incompetency in so many NBA front offices. And I feel like the root of it is a combination of cronyism, nepotism, just putting people in power that you want near you as opposed to focusing on winning and putting the best people in position of power. It just drives me crazy, Rick. And I'm sorry for the rant, but that's just always what I think of when I see Jalen Brunson is how did Dallas just let this incredible player go for absolutely nothing?
Yeah, well... a very substantial list together.
Yes.
Over time, where it's like, what were they looking at when they had this guy? I mean, it is a situation a lot of times where they play on a team where a coach has a system.
Yeah.
And they don't necessarily fit that system. And so they just basically put him on the back burner. They don't really give him a chance to play and do the kind of things he can do. And he winds up going someplace else. And he becomes very successful at it. I mean, one of the great examples from years gone by, the younger people have no idea who I'm talking about, but Dale Ellis, who played for the Mavericks back when Dick Motta was coaching there, and to play the game. And they trade him away, basically got nothing for him. He goes off, becomes an all-star player, leading the league in three-point shooting. I mean, it wasn't all of a sudden he learned how to play. And he finally got a chance to go to play somewhere where he's being able to show off his skills and talents in a way that's best suited for him. And that's why I've always felt when I did my coaching in the minor leagues, I look and evaluate my talent. Mm-hmm. And then put in a system, but only a system that is based upon the talent of my players, not a system that, hey guys, this is the way I want it done. You have to play this way. No, I'm going to put in something that you're going to be able to play the way that you play best, especially offensively. And the same thing with defense. A lot of times some of these coaches, they try to put in pressing and doing something. Well, if you don't have the right personnel, pressing is crazy because good players will eat you alive. I mean, right. So you have to have the right personnel, especially for the defense. But the defense is also a critical element. Your team has to buy into being a tough defensive team. As we've talked about this many times, very rarely has a team that's a bad defensive team in the lower half of the league ever won a championship. I mean, very few outside of the top 10 have ever done it. And usually when that happens, they're really, really good offensively because the bottom line of it is defense does not win championships by itself. Defense gives you the opportunity to win championships, but you still, the last time I checked, had to outscore the opponent.
Right.
So offense is usually a very critical element for that. So, yeah, but you're right about Brunson. But, you know, I see that happen so very often. And
yes, I don't think it should happen very often. That's my point. Does it really take that much intellect and acumen to make sensible decisions in the NBA? It drives me insane, Rick. I'm sorry. It just does. I feel like there's so many qualified people who can do these jobs much more effectively. But every time I look at the root of it, and you know, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I feel like most of these people in these positions of power are there simply because of who they know, and it's not necessarily because of their personal qualifications. And it just it's wild. It really is. I don't think most NBA teams care about winning as much as they do about surrounding themselves with people they love and they like, and it's just crazy to me. I don't know. That's just the world we live in, I guess. But I digress.
News, Cyrus. This is life. Okay, life.
Yep.
It's who you know. The biggest problem with it is that, and I've said this many times, and they can get upset with me if they want, there are some people out there scouting talent that couldn't know real talent if it walked up and bit them right in the butt because they get so hung up on athleticism at times, okay? You know, like if you were to go and just watch from an athletic standpoint, and you saw the Joker playing, you would probably say, oh, shit, I'm going home. I mean, this guy can't play. I mean, because he's not a great super athlete that's going to go ahead and wow you with his athleticism, but he sure as hell wows you with his ability to play. I mean, this guy is amazing. Yeah, and that's where it comes down to, is making the right choices when you have the draft pick. Just look at so many, over the course of time, the draft picks that some of the people made and how many they missed. I mean, Carl Malone's another one. When I was working at TBS doing stuff with the draft, I think when Carl was like 12th.
Incredible.
12th in the draft?
Incredible.
You know, and players were picked ahead of Michael Jordan. I mean,
yes.
Come on. There's so many things out there that don't make any sense. And I just shake my head sometimes. But, you know, now I don't follow it as closely. I'm not, you know, doing the job and working and getting out there and watching. But, my God, I can watch a player in college for 10 minutes and tell you whether I would want him on my team or not based upon one criteria. And that's first. And then there's other ones. But number one, does he have a natural feel for the game?
Mm-hmm.
Because that can't be taught. And if he doesn't have a natural feel for the game, he's never going to be as good as he should be. Absolute amazing natural talent and skill that he has, but without that feel, he's never going to utilize all of that to its fullest. And that's what it really boils down to. And you can just see it all the time. I mean, you know, I saw it in LeBron when I saw a video of him playing in high school. Same thing. So that's what you really need to look for. And then after that, then there's other things you look for. You know, where is he deficient in his skills? What's his shooting form look like? You can always help with that. You can teach somebody how to become a better shooter. You know, what kind of defense, what kind of attitude does he have? You know, watch his demeanor, things of that nature. You know, what's in his heart? I mean, what kind of person is he? Those are all important elements as well. But the number one thing is, does he have a natural feel for the game? Not is he a great athlete. If you can find the great athlete with the natural feel, who has the other, that's where you get your unbelievably great players from. That's the whole key to it. So you're right on with that statement. So it's going to be fun to see what happens again. They battled really hard. I mean, as you say, 2 point at halftime should be interesting to see what comes of that one. But for Philadelphia, they got to find a way to win that one. They can't go back and be down 3-1. That's not the way the things are right now. Not what the condition Embiid is, and he's not 100%. And it's going to be very difficult for them to do anything.
Rick, first of all, I admire your getup today. You are wearing blue and gold proud, mad respect. What are your thoughts on the, I don't know if this is a good time, maybe this isn't a good time to talk about it, but I was wondering, what are your thoughts on the U.S. Olympic team? It is stacked.
Yeah, this is as talented a team as they've ever had.
It really is.
They have so much talent. I think one of the things that will help is that, you know, LeBron doesn't have anything to prove now. LeBron is going to be a facilitator. He wants to win. And Steph, for this first opportunity, he's going to want to win. I mean, so there's going to be a real positive attitude, I think, on the part of these guys. And they do have a lot of guys that are younger who this is going to be a great experience for them. And it's just a matter if they make the commitment to defense. Again, you know, they have to be a good defensive team and play good, solid defense. And to make a commitment there. Offensively, who the hell is going to guard him if they play seriously? And, you know, because, you know, come on, they're going to play the kind of basketball that's going to give them all an opportunity to do it. And who cares who gets it done? You want to be standing on that freaking podium with USA on your chest, with a gold medal around your neck, and you want to see that flag being raised and listen to the national anthem. That's an amazing experience. I had it only once. Didn't have a gold medal. I played against the Russian team. I may have told the story before, obviously. I have many times. In Indianapolis when I was still in college. And we guarded the Soviet Union at the time. It was, you know, USSR. And when that national anthem played, I never felt more proud of being American than I did at that moment in my life. And I just say, I saw what my son went through when, you know, Canyon, who's, you know, on the Olympic team, which I'm so excited for him for, but he was a world champion and, you know, they won the World Cup and he had the medal around his neck, the national anthem. I have photos of him with the expression on his face. You can see the emotion behind him. Did it with the Pan Am Games as well. Did it twice in the AmeriCup as well. And so hopefully he'll have an opportunity to experience that, you know, in the Olympics as well. But that's a special, special feeling. And, yeah, like I say, the one thing in my career that I say, there's one thing that was missing in my career, it would be not having had an opportunity to play for the United States of America in the Olympics.
Well, and that's where your son is now. A good time to talk about your son, Canyon. 3-on-3 basketball.
Yeah. Well, as I say, he got chosen along with his teammates, you know, Kareem Maddox and Dylan Travis, and also Jim Rafferdad, who's just been unbelievable. In fact, they just won their first. It was the first FIBA World that they have all year long, which the first event was over in Utsunomiya, Japan. And they're just over there now. And I got to watch They made it into the medal rounds, and they won three games today and beat the number one team in the world, Serbia, OOB, and it came away with a victory. So it was really special. They didn't play their best. I mean, one game, Jimmer, who's a great, you know, they led last season for that whole 3x3. Canyon was the leading three-point shooter in the whole for the whole league, up at the high 40s. Jimmer was second right behind them, close. And so they were both on a team. Jimmer was 1 for 9 in one game, and they won.
Oh, my God. And by the way, you bring up the fact that Canyon is the leading three-point shooter in three-on-three basketball. And this goes back to what I was saying about 5 minutes ago about just the amount of incompetence in NBA front offices. You're telling me Canyon Barry and that three-point shooting of his could not be welcomed on an NBA roster? I'm sorry to digress. But seriously, I mean, come on.
Big thing is that so and he goes 0 for 5 in another game. Canyon goes 0 for 5. And they still wind up winning that game. And Dylan Travis came through a big time. And so yeah, I mean it's really Bryce Wills, he had to fill in for Maddox, who had a little calf situation that they didn't want to jeopardize him doing something serious to it. And he filled in admirably and they wound up winning. But yeah, I mean, when you can win games when your key players have bad games, that's what a team is all about.
Okay? Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
On the team thing, before we get to the other playoff stuff, my wife brought this up to me. Again, the talking heads drive me freaking nuts at times.
Really, and real fast, your wife qualified herself to discuss basketball. I mean, she's a legend.
An All-American basketball player, the only woman to have her jersey retired at her alma mater, William & Mary, and she's got all kinds of records there. And she ran women's basketball for the United States and actually helped the WNBA get started with Val Ackerman, who was the president, and helped get all the foreign players, put their training camps together, and did that for like 5 years. So she knows basketball really well.
Yeah,
she,
yeah.
Aside from all the other wonderful qualities she has, she's incredibly bright and knows the game. And somebody came up with the fact of saying, well, you think it's too late? Get it? That means that they're dying for something to talk about. Well, it's probably too late. LeBron and Steph are probably a little bit too old to be able to carry their teams to any more championships. You know what, guys? This is a freaking team game. Okay? You don't win by yourself. I mean, if you don't have the right personnel, you're not going to win a championship if your teammates don't come through. I could speak firsthand about that. I mean, I didn't have big name players and doing stuff, but my guys were unbelievable. I mean, what we did, and, you know, we talked about the documentary hoping coming out the beginning of next year, 50 years later, which, you know, but better late than never, I guess. At least I'll be hopefully still alive. So, yeah, so that's the whole thing. To be talking about that, wait a second. LeBron James on your team is a valuable asset to have, and you just utilize right way. You don't have to go. He doesn't have to be the guy to carry the team by himself. You know, when that's the whole thing. When you have a really good team, if somebody's struggling, the other players have to step up and get the job done. That's why it's a team. That's why it's not singles in tennis or golf when it's just you. This is what sports is about from a team concept. So to even bring up that discussion and write those guys off as if that'll never happen, that's ridiculous. It's such a waste. They must be dying for something to talk about because they bring up the most inane subjects that make no sense whatsoever. And this is one of them. I mean, it really is.
Well, let me ask you this, Rick. So I don't know if this echoes what they said, but so are you saying that the time is that it's too soon to start saying there's a changing of the guard in the NBA, that it's too soon to write off players like Steph and LeBron and KD?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, they're too talented. I mean, I don't keep at the end of their career. At the end, they're better at the end of their career than some guys will ever be in any time during their career.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, 80% of what they were is still really good. I mean, and that's part of a team to help you out and the experience that they have. How can you possibly say they're not going to win? No. If you surround them with the other personnel that are able to get the job done as a cohesive unit on both ends of the court, of course they can be contributors to it. Why do you put it all on them? They can't carry them. Well, who the hell is – why would you expect them to carry you?
I guess – and just to piggyback off what you're saying, if you swapped Stephen Curry and Anthony Edwards, if let's say Anthony Edwards was on this Warriors team, pretty good possibility they're still going to finish the 10th seed and be eliminated in the first round, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I don't necessarily – he would be a guy that would turn him into a you know, that much better a basketball team. I mean, no.
I'm probably with you. Yeah, I agree.
There is one guy, put him on a bunch of teams and it would change the whole dynamic, and that's the Joker.
Right. Dude, he's incredible. Isn't he amazing? I can't.
Let's face it. That, you know, the Lakers, well, since we're talking about the players, so the Lakers saved face. They didn't get swept. They played a consistent game throughout the game, even though they let him sneak up and get a little close. But that's the best. That's probably the most number of minutes that they played really good basketball on both ends of the court, and they wound up winning at home. You know, the chances of them winning this series are slim and none. Mm-hmm. I mean, crazy if you were to go ahead and bet on it. I mean, Denver is just a better basketball team than they are. And I'm assuming they will find a way to win. Now, if Denver loses the next game, well, that's a little interesting, obviously. But for them to beat Denver four times in a row, I just don't see that there's any realistic way that that's going to happen. Now, crazier things have happened. But if you're a betting person, you're not going to bet on that. And so congratulations to the Lakers for doing what they did. But even in that game, three plays that the Joker made, even later in the game when they're still trying to get themselves back, three freaking passes and things that he did. I guess I get such a joy out of watching. I love people who really are great at what they do. He made three of the most incredible freaking passes. How about the tip one that he made when the ball came, just freaking tipped it to the basket? I mean, this is a 7-foot guy doing this stuff. This guy is, there's never, ever been a center that plays the way the Joker plays. He is a true anomaly. Nobody has played the game at the center position the way the Joker plays the game. He's just so much fun to watch. Really, yeah, it's, he's actually become my favorite. I mean, other than because I love Steph and all, but outside of Steph, he's my favorite player to watch. God, is this guy good to watch? He's amazing, absolutely. So that series is basically going to be over. I tell you the one that was the one.
Well,
that,
Rick, real fast, just for the. For the degenerates out there who love to gamble, because you brought up the odds of the Nuggets Lakers series, you could bet on this stuff, obviously. And so I'm at the FanDuel Sportsbook right now. The Lakers, if you want to bet on them to win the series, they are plus 1,800. What that means is, if you bet $1, I believe you get $180 back. So yeah. Throw your money away if you want, but the odds are incredible.
Yeah, just want to add that. Crazy money means nothing. You want to throw some money down just to see if you get a big payday, you know? Okay,
exactly. But sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
The one that's interesting, though, that's interesting, especially with the way that they played this last game. Cleveland had a chance to take care of business and take control of the series, and and Orlando came out and just played really well,
in that right? game.
And so now. They're going up to Cleveland with great confidence, knowing they just have to find a way to beat them one time up there and take care of business at home. So that should be a really fun series and see how that one's going to play out. My dear friend and, you know, our good friend Clifford Ray, obviously, is helping with Cleveland. They've had him out there having to work with some of their big guys. And he's done a nice job with some of their big guys. He's done a great job everywhere he's been with big players when he's one of the best big men's coaches in the history of the NBA. So that game five should be a really entertaining series. And then, you know, Milwaukee Bucks Pacers is over. Yeah, I mean, Dame is out and, you know, Giannis is out. I mean, that's finished. So
the Pacers. Rick, you know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because over on Locked On Warriors, I've been discussing what could very easily be a pipe dream. But if this finishes up the way we're expecting it, is there any world that you see Giannis deciding he wants out? I mean, there's no future there. Dame's old, Middleton's old. The rest of the crew is just a bunch of role players. Giannis, I think his days of winning championships in Milwaukee are over. And everything I've read and heard is that he's not committed to being a Bucks lifer. He wants to keep winning, and he wants to be in environments where he can be competing for championships. So what I've been proposing over on the other program is, I think the Warriors have the best package to offer the Bucks of any other team in the NBA, given they have four ready-to-play youngsters that I think would be ideal for a rebuilding squad like the Bucks. They could also throw in some first-round picks. My point is, they have a package. Giannis has repeatedly expressed his admiration and respect for Stephen Curry. They love each other. There's that playback in the All-Star game where Steph threw that alley-oop to Giannis.
The bounce pass was ridiculous.
Correct. That's my dream. Could be a pipe dream.
Okay, but here's the thing. So what are you saying to give up for that? I mean,
you'd have to give up the house. You'd have to give. This would be for a one for a very short window, but you'd give up Kuminga, Moody, Pajemski, I mean, maybe even Trace Jackson Davis. I mean, but that's why you're in the running for it. No other team in the NBA has that kind of young core with that level of ceiling yet to be attained. So you're selling a dream to the Bucks, right? I mean, Kuminga could be a superstar in this game. I don't see any other team that can offer that kind of package. I've heard people mention like the Thunder with all their first round draft picks. But look, those first round draft picks are going to be like high first rental. The Thunder are going to be a great team for years to come. So the value of those first round picks are skeptical. They're not going to give up any of their core players to get a player like Giannis. So I can't think of anyone else. I think the Warriors have the package. But yeah, you're giving up the future, but you're getting at least a year of Steph, Klay, Giannis, Draymond, and you know, and whoever else you can bring together. Because with Giannis, you're getting great for free agents with a name like that. So that is my pipe dream, sir. Your thoughts?
Well, it's a pipe dream, but it's also a big risk part of the Warriors to give up so much young talent that could be an integral part of their success for years to come, you know, unless they got some miracle thing that they know they're going to be able to get their hands on some other young people to be able to come in and do it, because you still have to have a bench. You still have to have other people who can play. Just because Giannis is coming here, you got an older Steph Curry, you've got an older Draymond, you got a Klay Thompson who's not the Klay Thompson of the past. You know, I mean, it's kind of like what, you know, some of these guys go for the 1 year to do it. We've seen this happen in the past. I mean, older player going off to, you know, the Lakers when they got Karl Malone and, you know, and Gary Payton and these people moving, and it doesn't work all that well. And then what happens? So now the team has got to start to rebuild again. And it shows you what can happen with rebuild. You want to talk about a good job of rebuilding a team? Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, yes.
I mean, come on. This is a team. Remember the team, the guys that were on that team at one time? Westbrook. Right? Westbrook,
Harden.
Kevin Durant, Harden. I mean, you know, they had an amazing group of people, and they made all kinds of trades and did it, and eventually now they've got themselves back. I think that, to me, they were the surprise of the league.
Absolutely.
I mean, and they're playing well. I mean, you talk about taking care of business. That series is over. I mean, they're kicking butt. I mean, they are very, very impressive. You know, I mean, they're up 3-0, and the Pelicans had no chance whatsoever, especially since they're a little short. But, I mean, they were very impressive. I hadn't really seen much of them, and I watched it. I said, wow, they're playing some really good basketball, and there's nothing more dangerous than a young team with great confidence. You know, so
that's absolutely, absolutely right, sir.
Deal. So, yeah. Then the other one that is, I think, a little bit of a shocker to me, and another team that did a great job of getting themselves to where they are now is Minnesota.
I love that team. I love that team. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, that's all. I mean, Phoenix is going to win 4 games in a row. I mean, that's been a big, huge disappointment. And, you know, as much as I love KD and think he's such an incredibly great player, I still think he's going to look back when his career is over and say, why the hell did I ever leave?
Absolutely. It's never worked out ever since he left. And before as well. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's unfortunate.
Might have been able to do. They could have had one of the great runs like the Celtics and the Lakers in the 90s and the Warriors were great and he was part of it for a little bit. If he had stayed, oh my God.
All Kevin Durant had to do is delete that Twitter app. And I think he would have been fine because all the noise that drove him away was coming from that stupid Twitter app. And just he cares about what other people think. It's unfortunate. It's really a shame because If he was able to drown out the outside noise, you're right. He would have stayed with the Warriors. They're still a dynasty. It's incredible what this franchise would have done if he had stayed. I mean, we're talking who knows how many championships. It would have been
without question. And then the last series, of course, is another one that I don't know what's going to happen with this one. To be honest with you, the Mavericks have really good last game.
Rick, real fast, sir, if you don't mind taking a step back, just because I love your insights about everything, but if the Suns end up being swept, what does Phoenix do? I mean, they went all in on this threesome. I mean, I'm already hearing talk about Frank Vogel losing his job over this, but like, what do you do if you're Phoenix? If you're the GM of that team, what do after this this catastrophe?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly pointy. There's no question about it. You'd have to take a very close look at it. I don't follow them that close, obviously, to know exactly what's going on, what the inner workings are, how the chemistry is amongst the players. But certainly, they're right up there near the top if you're going to take a team that was disappointing.
Yeah, big time.
I mean, so
and then that's a hell of a trio to I mean, Booker, Durant, Bradley Beal, who has a no-trade clause in his contract, incredible. But to have that threesome and get swept in the first round, you're right. That's I can't think of a bigger disappointment, in all honesty, in recent history. That's crazy.
That's pretty crazy. But the other one, that's a fun one to watch, because I really don't know what's going to happen. A lot will depend upon if Kawhi comes back close to what he was, because obviously he was rusty when he came back and didn't play particularly well. They turned the ball over too many damn times also. Doncic is another amazing player. Oh. He's a smaller version of you know, wow, amazing stuff that he does, like the Joker. I mean,
yes.
Who was taught how to play the game fundamentally sound growing up, because that's what happens over there. They get all of the videotapes, all the fundamentals, and they drill them on fundamentals. And so that's why you see these guys come over who play fundamentally sound and who have a great feel for the game. Obviously, both of those guys have such a great court vision and feel for the game. Just incredible. And, you know, and Doncic can shoot the hell out of it. So anyway, it's kind of interesting how stuff plays out, but I'm going to be looking forward to seeing what happens with that next game. And then obviously a crucial game for the Clippers. They got to find a way to, tie this series up. Then I don't have any idea. I mean, I have no idea who can win that series. I really don't.
It's a hell of a series for a first round matchup. You know, I'm hearing, and this is all just chatter. There's nothing serious about this except for, you know, two gentlemen like us just having fun talking about it. But there are whispers in the gossip world of Paul George, who's going to be a free agent, if my information is correct, possibly being a target for the Warriors. I don't know how realistic that is. I think he would be a fantastic fit. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's one of the premier, you know, small forwards in the league. There's no doubt about that. Just a matter of, you know, what do you have to give up for him? I mean, Wiggins obviously would be probably one of the guys they might decide to let go if you're going to bring Paul George in. You certainly don't want to have Wiggins and him there, because they already have enough of an issue with Kuminga. Kuminga might be someone that they want to get because he's a younger guy. Could be interesting. Offseason is going to be very intriguing in the NBA this year, especially with the way players move so indiscriminately now. It's crazy. It's like a revolving door. Hey, what NBA guys are going to go in the portal? We need to have a portal for the NBA.
Oh, that's incredible. I want to mention real fast, just for a moment, that if for anybody watching the show, if you're watching this live on the Mic'd Up app, it's where we always broadcast our live shows, to please tap the heart at the middle right of your screen to subscribe to the program. And you will know you did it right and it's turned on if the heart turns blue. So just a quick message to everyone out there who's watching this live on the Mic'd Up app, if you don't mind doing so.
Replay. Let's get into some questions. Before we leave, I want to get into stuff. But let's get some questions. We do that early on because we'll probably have questions that we've already answered. So let's get some of the questions.
Yeah, sounds good. Here's Webby.
Rick and Cyrus, now with the first mid-season tournament in the books, what do you think of the format? Did that idea generate more interest, or is it just a gimmick?
I had some questions, a little apprehensive. I mean, but I think it worked. I think the players seemed to get into it a little bit more, which is the most important thing. The players seemed to buy into it, and it gave a little meaning to the first part of the season. I think it worked well.
What are your thoughts on the Lakers having a banner hoisted up for it? Was that a little too much, or did you?
Why not? It's a tournament as part of your league. I mean, it's fair. You're the first winner of the inaugural, beginning of the season event that they have, whatever the hell they're going to wind up calling it for good. But yeah, I had no problem with it. I thought it worked out very nicely. So it was
I agree. You know what? The only weird thing about it, and again, this is a learning process, I think, for everyone, is both those teams who were in the finals, the Lakers and the Pacers, the Lakers won the thing, they looked exhausted. And they both faced ramifications for the amount of energy and effort. I see your reaction. Go ahead. Take it away. What were your thoughts on that?
That's fine. I have no problem with it. First of all, I'm not going to play. I play every time I put my uniform on. I'm playing as hard as I can play. What's on the line? You know, I have a first game of the season, last game of the season, last game of seven games in the finals. I mean, to me, they're all important. I mean, there's just more importance on it, you know, from everybody else's standpoint. But for me, every game was important. Every game, my pride is on the line. I want to go out and play well. I want to play my best every time I put my uniform on.
Rick, I wish every player felt that way. I don't think every player has that same approach, though.
Well, that's what my father instilled in me. Take great pride in what you do in life and always give your best effort and never be afraid to fail because, you know, you're going to fail. You're not a perfect human being. I mean, you're going to fail. And intelligent people learn from their mistakes and you minimize those mistakes. You don't make the same ones over and over again. That helps make you a little bit better. And you have to evaluate everything you do in life. You evaluate what happened, what could I do better, blah, blah, blah. And so for me, you know, putting that uniform on mean you were going to get the best that I had to give that day. You know, sometimes it wasn't as good as other times, but it was going to, at least I was trying. I mean, you weren't going to get me out there not trying. That's why I get so pissed off at whoever this idiot was that put this film on that I quit on the Warriors in Game 7. I mean, I want to wring this guy's neck if I ever got my hands on him, but I wouldn't do that.
Well, the person who perpetuated was the Suns' Al McCoy. I think he started the whole thing.
I did, but then somebody else coming up with some things that I quit on the teams, and then the guy runs video, and I mean, all I was doing was passing the teammates open for shots, trying to get everybody else.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I wouldn't. That video is bullshit. I'm sorry to swear, but that video is bullshit. And again, you know, Simmons wrote that stupid thing in his book, which was it just drives me crazy that Bill Simmons never has once reached out to you to get your perspective. That is what true journalism is getting a well-rounded perspective, not just hearing one side of a story and running with it. And he wrote in that in his book that it's all based on Al McCoy. That's who he attributes, is that Al McCoy claims you quit on the Warriors. It's ridiculous.
Outside of that, then they used this quote from Ken Macker, who was a nobody with the Warriors, a friend of Franklin Muley's, the owner of the team, coming out talking about the place that all the players hated me. I mean, what the hell? I mean, give me a break. I mean, it's like, hey, I might have been the easiest guy to get along. That's because I wanted to win, and I'm not going to let you go out there and bullshit around on the court, and I'm going to get, you know, say something. But compared to what I see that Michael Jordan has done in some of these other stories.
And Kobe Bryant. And Kobe, yeah.
Like Casper Milquetoast. I mean, no, compared to what these guys would do. I mean, so anyway, but that's ancient history. It doesn't matter.
But I'm really sorry you went through that. That's unfortunate. I you know, I don't think anyone should ever live life with misrepresentations and falsehoods defining them. And I don't think it's defining you, but it's really unfortunate that these lies are out there. And I'm sorry that you've dealt with that. That sucks.
It's okay, because I know who I am and my friends know who I am.
So and I know who you are, sir. Yeah, and I vouch for you all day, every day.
I get into talking about the last thing I want to talk about before we leave. Go ahead.
Oh, next. Okay, so this is M. Miller.
Hey, Rick, how you doing? Michael Miller here. I am thinking that the Warriors' disappointing season had to do with the makeup of their team. While they are highly athletic in most instances, they're still missing a big man in the middle, as Looney had an off season, and of course it doesn't help that Draymond wasn't around for a big part of the season. But I think he's on the back end, and clearly so is Clay, so significant changes are going to have to be made. I don't know exactly what they're going to do because they are in salary cap hell. So it's going to be a tough stretch here for the Warriors to come back.
Well, they're not going to re-sign, you know, obviously 31 million or something for Chris. I mean, CP3, I mean.
Yeah, so. 30 on the dot. Yes, that's a team option. But Rick, I'll say this, sorry to interrupt you fast, but I learned recently that the salary cap situation for the Warriors is not as dire as it's being painted. A lot of people were running with this report from Bobby Marks of ESPN that the Warriors were three, and myself included, because I trusted him, and all of a sudden he's pretending like he never said it, but basically the impression was that the Warriors were $3 million over the cap, not including Chris Paul's team option of $30 million. Not true. The Warriors are actually, if you erase Chris Paul's contract, which they might do, I think they should trade it to get assets, but if they choose not to sign that team option, the Warriors are entering this offseason approximately $27 million under the cap. So they're not in a hell. Now, granted, they're going to sign Klay Thompson back. That's a big one. You got to decide what to do with Chris Paul. But I just wanted to inform the audience that they're actually $27 million under the cap. So they do have some flexibility. I just wanted to give you that information before we move on.
I'm going to sign Klay Thompson for $42 million, and he'd be crazy to think that anybody else is going to sign him for a long-term contract for crazy money. And he's had his whole career there. I mean, what a great thing to be able to. And it would be great. And I would say it again that, hey, if you could do it over again, you could divine everything perfectly. He'd want to stay with the same freaking team. I mean, the Warrior fans are so great. I mean, it was, you know, it would have been great to stay there the whole time. But, you know, it would have messed up the space-time continuum and all the other stuff that goes on. I mean, I wouldn't have my amazing wife and my other son and all the other stuff that goes on in life, because everything happens for a reason in life and you accept it. But yeah, to be able to stay and be with the same and do it, I think that would be something. I think that's something Clay would like to do. He's well entrenched there. He's got all of the things he wants to do. He's got his, and he doesn't need any money. I mean, so it shouldn't be anything about the money. Does he want to stay with his buddies, with Clay, and, you know, I mean, with Steph and with Draymond, and be there and try to see if they can put the magic together for one more season based upon some of the other people that they get, that they bring in? You know, the development of the young people had to be very promising. I mean, I thought it was. So, yeah, I don't think he's going to leave. And whatever they're going to offer him, hopefully – but it's going to certainly be nowhere in the range of $42 million, that's for sure. And I don't even know if they'll do more than 1 year. But it's like I said, the thing, he should have been at the start of the year, it should have been something that he should have been coming off the bench as instant offense. That should be Clay's role for the rest of his career. The guy's an incredible shooter. Bring him in, you get stuff, you set stuff up, you get him shots. If he's going good, you milk him dry, you put him on the bench for some rest, you bring him in, see if he's going good. You don't have to play minutes. He could extend his career by a couple of seasons doing that.
His scoring average went up coming off the bench. You're absolutely right.
Doing a good job with it, and that should be his role. I mean, why not accept that? I mean, I know. Hell, I was willing to do it when I went to Houston to take a subservient role. I didn't give a crap about being the star of the team. I just wanted to win. And we had great players. I mean, that's probably the most talented team I've ever been on. I was on with two Hall of Famers. You know, Calvin Murphy and Moses Malone and Rudy Tomjanovic and, you know, Mike Newland. I had so many really good players that there. And was willing to do whatever necessary. I mean, I was playing point five forward. I was, you know, one of the top assist guys in the league as a forward because we didn't really have a real, you know, with John Lucas, who I thought I was going to go to play with, who was the point guard, and they let him come to the Warriors, which, you know, hell, I said, I wasn't coming here to be the point guard, but I'll do that. And so, and that's why I say now, if I could come back and I was, you know, young again to do it, I would play point guard. I would want to play point guard because you have such an impact on the game. You control the game. And if you understand the game and you see it and you do the things, that's what Joker does as a center. The Joker does that as a center.
Yes, he does.
Bill Walton was a great passer, but not to the extent of Joker.
He's a point center. He's a point center. It's ridiculous.
Kareem, good passer at the post and all, but the Joker is like nuts. So, yeah. That would be the fun thing to do. To be, you know, be the guy with the ball in your hand that you can control the destiny of your team. So it's going to be fun to see what happens. Let's get some of these other questions out of the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to add real fast too, last offseason, the Warriors offered Klay Thompson a 2-year, $48 million extension, which he turned down. The reason why I bring that up is it wouldn't surprise me if that's the offer that's brought back on the table. It seems to be the one that's most fair, and I hope Clay accepts it. I know it sounds like Clay is seeking one more huge deal, but at this stage of his career, I mean, I don't know what he expects. And again, as Greg Popovich said eloquently, if Manu Ginobili can come off the bench, anyone can come off the bench. Just wanted to add that. Sorry. Here's Nick Cohen.
Hey, Rick. Anything from the NBA playoffs so far that surprises you?
Yeah, a little bit about that before, Nick. I mean, the big surprise to me has been Oklahoma City. I mean, geez, and the same thing with Minnesota, you know, and then Phoenix, you know, not as playing like we thought they would be able to play. So we have both ends of the spectrum there. You know, you've had, you know, the Timberwolves and Oklahoma City Thunder before the season began. I don't know if anybody would have picked those two teams to be at the top of the Western Conference.
Yeah, sure. I don't know if anyone did.
How could anybody realistically, before this season started, say that they were going to be two best teams in the Western Conference?
You're right.
Any sense at all. And so that's been, that's been very, very interesting to see. So those are probably the biggest surprises for me. And then it's unfortunate that you had the injuries. And the only thing about that, I hate the injuries to them at all. But the sad part about that is there's another excuse for Doc Rivers' failure. Okay, so... And, you know, I'm not a fan of Doc Rivers because of what he did to Clifford Ray. And so everybody should know that. And I'm going to tell it to the day I die. This man should be ashamed of himself for doing what he did to someone who was such an integral part of the success that he had with the Boston Celtics. And to treat him the way he treated him, to do that, it was inexcusable. So I will never root for him. And as much as I might like some of these other players, I love Giannis and I love, you know, Dame is pretty exciting too and all. I can't root for that team if he's coaching them. I'll never root for a team that he's coaching. Never. Because
and just to elaborate for people who aren't familiar with the story, Clifford Ray was an assistant coach on the 2008 championship Celtics team, and Doc Rivers shorted him like half what he's owed, correct?
What Doc Rivers did is he was the lowest paid guy on the staff. He didn't even sit on the bench. He had to sit behind the bench. If it wasn't for him, they would have never had Kevin Garnett, because he took Al Jefferson and turned him into a much better player to make the trade for him.
Right.
Then he developed Big Baby. Then he helped develop Kendrick Perkins. Then he also brought in the guy from the that played with the Nets. I just had the name on the top of my head. This is a senior moment.
I can't remember either. I'm sorry.
During the playoffs, he brought him in for them, and which helped them a lot. He was an success that they had, okay? And then he gets half a playoff share that year, and the next year, the same thing. He gets half a playoff share. Doc Rivers is making $5 million at the time, and he doesn't go into Danny Ainge and say, listen, Danny, this is ridiculous. You need to give him a full share, because the teams paid them. In the old days when I was there, the players had a vote on whether what the coaches got. Can you imagine that? That was crazy.
That is crazy. Were you talking about P.J. Brown or Scott Pollard?
P.J. Brown that he brought in. Yeah, that's the guy he brought in who was an integral part of their success.
Yeah.
And so, credit to Clifford Ray. And so to treat a guy like that, and, especially when, you had him. Then the next year, he gets a half a playoff share again. And he doesn't go to bat for him. And you're making $5 million. Hey, make up the difference yourself. I would have said to Danny, hey, Danny, either you pay him the full share, or I'm going to the press and tell him what a cheap SOB you are, and I'm making the difference. I mean, come on, stand up for your freaking guy that's your coach to help you win. Then the next year, he told Clifford in September that he wasn't going to rehire him.
Why wait that long? What's the point of that?
Here, when you're told you don't have a job in September. Okay, so he should be ashamed of himself. You should never treat anybody that way. I just want you to understand the type of person that Doc Rivers is when it came to that. Now, personally, if you know him individually, you may love him, maybe a great guy doing stuff, but what he did was reprehensible, inexcusable, and I will never root for him.
I love it. Is it time to play the music? Is now the time or no?
No, it's okay. So I'm not even done. I'm done with that one. But that's just.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right to express that. I think that's why people love you, Rick. You speak the truth, sir, and I respect you tremendously for that.
All right, let's finish up with some of the questions here, and we can get down to.
Yes, sir. Here's Jason Pollard.
With the Warriors missing the playoffs and the Lakers looking like they might get taken out early, is there any chance that LeBron and Steph team up at some point? Any way for that to work financially for either team?
The financial end, you might be able to answer, but I never pay any attention to that. That's all it's got to do. But that has a big factor, obviously, for an owner has to be willing to perhaps go over the cap or do whatever he needs to do. Whether LeBron would be the guy to team up to be there, I mean, he'll be another year older. He's had a remarkable season. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, even the way he played last night, he was doing some crazy stuff at his age. I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete and has been an amazing player without question. Whether or not they would want to do that, I don't know. I would say if you're going to have to do something and make some kind of moves and everything, the Giannis thing would be one that you'd have to look at, I think, a little bit more seriously, because this is a guy that can be there for a number of years and be the central part of the team that you build around. You're certainly not going to do that with LeBron.
Absolutely. LeBron is the Tom Brady of the NBA. Is that a fair thing to say? I mean, it's unreal.
I like that. That's a good analogy. Did you hear that Brady said if something happened to a player, he might come back?
That's incredible. Come to the Niners. San Francisco will welcome you back. He's from the Bay Area. We welcome you back. Here's Mindy, I think. Oops.
Hey, Rick. Phil here. Hey, quick update. If you could give a clarification on who the greatest scorer is in college basketball history, Pete Maravich did it in 3 years without a three-point line, basically 83 games. Caitlin Clark surpassed him in 130-plus games over 4 years. So, all good that she did that. She's a great player, but Pete Maravich is amazing. The best thing that came out of this was Pete Maravich was put back in the news, and a lot of young people learned about Pete Maravich. Thanks.
Well, first of all, why are we comparing women's basketball to men's basketball? I mean, seriously, congratulations. She's spectacular. I call her she's the female Steph Curry. I mean, she's pretty spectacular. I saw her. She was in the stands at the Pacers game. You know, she was there. When they drafted her, they sold out season tickets for the whole season. 90% of the games in the WNBA that she's going to play in next year will be on television. I mean, they're taking full advantages. The arenas will sell out where they go because all the great fans, the women fans who love women's basketball are going to go out. Even the men fans. I mean, I love watching her play. She's really
same.
And so congratulations to her. And I think, you know, she's getting a $20 million deal, $28 million from Nike for shoes and stuff. So she's set for the rest of her life. God bless her for that. And then here's the thing. Well, all these people say, well, she's totally underpaid. All these idiots that don't have any idea what's going on. I mean, you don't pay somebody money if you don't have the money, okay? The NBA is paying the money because they've got money coming in. The WNBA doesn't draw that much when it comes to money that's coming in from advertiser sales, from TV, all the other stuff.
And ticket sales, yeah.
Yeah, they, you know, they're not paying outrageous salaries to the point where they lose money. I mean, so it's a business. Just understand that. So Caitlin Clark is going to be just fine. She's already now become a multimillionaire. She's great for the game of basketball, especially for women's basketball. And yeah, and so I wish her well. It's going to be fun to watch her play and see what she does. I mean, I saw that Ice Cube did a great thing. So he offered her $5 million to come play in the Big Three, which I'm going to be in again this year. Looking forward to that. That would have been really interesting to see. That would have certainly created some news for people to come out and watch and see what she could have done. But that's not the case now. She's going to be playing for the Fever. So, you know, God bless her. Good luck to her and see what the hell happens. But let's not compare apples to oranges. Plus the fact, you know, Pete, no 3-point shot. I mean, what do you think? How many points do you think Pete would have had? I know I played with Pete in the exhibition. Pete would have scored so many more points because he shot from that regularity. That was like a normal shot for him, what college 3-point shot is. So God knows how many more points he would have had. You know, so I don't know why people want to make those comparisons, but he would. He was one of the greatest scorers of all time. This guy, Billy the Hill McGill, was another guy that scored, I think, like 40 points or something more a game when he played ball years and years ago, a big man. And but Pete was pretty special. No question about that. Pete's biggest problem, I don't think Pete ever played on the right team when he was in his prime. I just don't think he was on the team that would utilize his talents. I had so much fun playing with him. We played on a tour over to Asia. And it was great. Phil Jackson was our player coach. Bobby Dandridge was on the team. We had a lot of really nice players. And we went over and played well. We won all of our games. We were playing the Taiwanese national team. And I said to Phil, I looked and said, Phil, look, they're playing 2-1-2. I said, let me play point. And I said, Pete, I'm going to play point. I'm going to come down. I'm going to the media and I'm going to go hard and split the two at the top. Just go into one of the seams. Okay. Just spot up in the seams. I think I had 16 assists in the game and 14 of them were the Pete. Wow. Went in, threw it over the top of the guy's Pete's wide open for a little, you know, 18, 17 foot, 15 foot jump shot. And so it was kind of fun, but that was a really great experience. Got to know Pete really well. He was really helpful to my son, Scooter, who went to his camp, helped him tremendously. And so it's so sad to see him pass at such an early age. They could have been prevented, you know, had they gotten found, you know, the issue that he had. So kind of like Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain could possibly still be alive today, even if he had gone into the doctors. I know his sister Barbara was really mad at him because he didn't do that. So I'm just, hey, you older people, go get your yearly checkups, okay? Your health is everything. Go get checked up and see. Don't wait until something happens to go in to have it taken care of. Go get checked, hopefully maybe prevent things from happening. Here's two examples, two great players that could have been around still today if they had taken care of themselves properly from a health standpoint. So,
well, Pete Maravich had a heart defect. Is that correct?
A heart situation. It could have been if they had found that he could have, you know, it could have been something that would not have killed him. Yeah.
Oh, that's tragic. And then Wilt, his was preventable too? Like,
well, yeah, he found something there. He got in and done his checkups and done stuff. And he probably, you know, that's what Barbara was telling me, his sister, that he, you know, he could have been, you know, lived a lot longer. That's why you got to take care of yourself because you just don't know. I mean, I don't wait till something happens. If there's anything at all that is even questionable, I'm in looking, I'm going to the specialist, I'm going to somebody. I'm trying to live, you know, live to 100 years old. Still want to play pickleball and be able to go fly fishing. So that's what I'm hoping to do at 100 years of age. So I got a lot of years hopefully left in front of me and we'll see.
Well, speaking of age, what are your thoughts real fast on Hubie Brown, who's 90, I think, and still going strong as a color commentator?
Okay, well, you brought it up. I was going to bring it up. I wasn't going to mention a name, but...
Oh, I'm sorry. Did that screw up?
You don't have to apologize. It's actually good that you did it. I mean, not to say, you know, makes people go, oh, Rick Barry is really jumping on you, UB. Well, the bottom line, at the end of the game, which was an exciting game, okay? How in the world do you spend the entire time on a timeout with 6 seconds point something to go in the game, and you're discussing that the most important element of the game is the guy passing the ball in bounds? Okay? I mean, not one mention was made. What should the defense do? In that situation, I am a huge, not a huge problem. Every time, every single time, I will foul with a 3-point lead.
Yes.
Less seconds to go and make them have to make the first one, miss the second intentionally, get it back and score. How many times do coaches have to see what happened in that game to have a 3-point shot go in and tie the game to go? So they were really lucky that they got away with that, because Rick Carlisle should have fouled.
And I'm 100% with you. 100% with you. Go ahead, sir.
Well, but you'll be talking about that instead of making the inbounds pass. Plus the fact he's saying, hey, you're there, and you, when you're defending, and you're defending, and you watch where he's going. Well, UB, that's exactly what I want the defender to do. If I'm taking the ball inbounds, and I got a play set up, and I know I'm going to have to pass the ball to the guy coming off a screen to my left, do you think I'm stupid enough that I'm going to look left before I make the pass to tell the defender that's what I'm going to do? Close magic. What you do is an up-close magic, if you're not aware of what happens, folks, is the magician gets you to see something. He does something to draw your attention while he's doing something he doesn't want you to see.
Yep.
And same thing. If I know that my play is set up, that my guy's coming off the screen, that's going to be to my left. When I get the ball, I'm looking straight, and at the end, I'm looking to my right. I'm letting the defender think I'm going that way, and I know I'm passing it the other way. So all of that stuff was wasted talk. And not talking about the situation that needed to be discussed was, should Rick Carlisle foul or not? There's two schools of thought, some do, some don't. I can't believe that every coach in that situation is not of the opinion that you would foul every single time.
100% agree with you. And this was a huge point of contention just this season, because there was, I think, more than one instance of this with the Warriors, where they were in a position like this, and they got burned for that. The Oklahoma City Thunder, because Steve Kerr did not issue that edict, let Chet Holmgren hit that three I can't remember if that three tied or won the game for them, but and sent it to overtime. But the Warriors lost that game, and I'm 100% with you. It's logical. It is a logical thing. I don't get it either, Rick. And so you're saying Hubie Brown was not focused on that at all. His focus was just on the inbound pass.
Never even mentioned it.
Gotcha.
Never even mentioned it, talking about the pass inside, which was crazy. And that's the same way you could talk about in that situation. If I was there doing so, I would have said, yeah, well, if you're taking it in bounds, here's what you need to do. You need to go ahead and you make the guy think you're doing one thing when you're doing another. That's not the – hell, that's easy. I'm going to be able to get the ball in bounds. But the thing is, do we foul the defense? What does the defenders do? Do we foul? Hell, yes. As soon as he gets the ball, you immediately foul him.
Yep, absolutely right. I'm with you. It drives me crazy, the folks who think there is like another side to this argument. I hear other people say, well, what if they go up in a shooting motion? It's like, you do it before that happens. Like, you do it right away, right?
Catches the ball.
The moment he catches the ball, 100% with you. 100% with you.
This situation, not only did they get it, they did something, dribbled with it, and made a pass over it. I mean, it was crazy. And they had the ball in somebody's hand who wasn't as good a shooter that they should have fouled.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the kind of stuff when I watch that most of the time I just watch. I have a hard time listening.
I hear you.
I listen and I'm hearing stuff and I'm saying, what? Didn't they just see what was going on? What are they talking about here? I mean, it's very difficult for me to watch games. I wish that I could do what Peyton Manning and his brother do.
Eli. I know. Oh, I know. You'd be great at that. You would be great at that.
Sitting there, and let's just talk about the stuff that's going on. Not worry about the play-by-play thing, but just watch it and make comments about what's happening. And have somebody there that I have respect for that understands the game. And let's talk about all the things that are going on and what was done, what needed to be done here, what was there. You know, I mean, because there's so many things that take place. And I'm not negative. I'm trying to be informative.
Yeah.
You know, oh, Rick Barry is too negative when he did it. No, I was telling the freaking truth. I was telling you what was happening on the court. you know, trying to educate you what you should and shouldn't be doing in certain situations. And so much of that happens in the game of basketball, and yet nothing's said about it. And then, you know, and then I still can't even stand the carrying and the traveling and the moving screens. And, oh, my gosh, please. I mean, it's painful. It's really painful. Did you see some of the videos that were sent out? They put together highlights of some of the stuff that it's just, I mean, you look at it and say, these officials, every official that's involved in all of those things, these NBA, I hope those guys are getting fined. No, I mean, one of them was like five steps. I mean,
it's egregious. And it makes no sense because sometimes they'll call it. And then when they do call it, you're like, why are you calling it now and not the 30 other times that you did not call it? There's no consistency with officiating. That's what I feel. My gripe is that piggybacking off of.
They stand there dribbling, walk up the floor. Just they're carrying the ball as they're walking up the floor dribbling. Do you know what an advantage that is? I'm just saying, my God, if I was playing and I could do that, holy crap.
No, I agree. We got a lot left. Do you want to get through all these or do you want to save it for another day? What are you thinking?
Oh, I got my wife's not back home yet from working out, so we're going to go for a bike ride, so I got time.
All right, cool. Here's a Bay Meadows Bill.
Hey, Rick, I know the answer is probably economics, and there really is no easy solution, but with an 82-game regular season that leads to player injuries and also brings up issues like load management, which nobody likes, and the playoffs that go from April till June, it's a grind on the players, obviously. Sometimes as a fan, I feel it's a grind on me. Do you ever see a solution that would change this that both ownership and players' association would be happy with? Thanks.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they're willing to want to cut back on the number of games. I mean, it's all done. It's all about money.
Everything is. Yeah.
Hey, you cut back on the games, that's going to cut back on the money. I don't think anybody would be happy about that. That's just the American way of life. I don't know. The load management thing, I just couldn't relate to that. To be honest with you, I wanted to play. I hated when I wasn't playing. I hated it when we blew somebody out because I knew I wouldn't get to play very much. I wanted to play, you know, and that's why statistics are so crazy because, you know, can you imagine what Steph's statistic would be if he stayed in games when all of a sudden he played 30 minutes and he's got 44 or something and he's sitting for them and he played 30 minutes. I mean, you know, so that's why stats are so irrelevant in a lot of ways because, you know, the guys aren't playing as much as they could play to put up the numbers that they're capable of putting up. And I understand because of the money that's involved now that they want to try to keep the players as healthy as possible. But even if you cut down on their minutes, it doesn't mean they're not going to get hurt. You can get hurt. Look at Giannis. He got hurt walking up the court, right? He was just walking up the court. He was just already going up the court, and all of a sudden he's down.
Well, and the switch in sports for the Niners in the Super Bowl, was it Greenlaw who just – was just running back to the field and just pop, Achilles, done.
Never comes to all of that, and which is unfortunate. But
yeah,
you just want the competitive level to be high, and that's why I like, you know, the start of the season, the little tournament, and we keep the competition there. I love competition. That's why I had to find stuff to do. That's why I got into world-long driving and golf. That's why I'm doing pickleball and stuff now, which I'm really
still winning. Still winning, by the way. And a side note, I forgot to send you this clip, but there was a funny bit the other day. I don't know if you're into the Daily Show or not. It's a funny sort of political show. It's all comedy. It's mocking the whole thing. And they did a whole segment. John McEnroe's brother, Patrick McEnroe, was involved in this about how pickleball players are sabotaging and invading and taking over tennis courts because you have to share those courts. And
down the tennis courts and putting in pickleball courts.
Yeah. And so it was just a funny, and the whole thing, none of them was serious, but it was just a bunch of tennis players who were griping about their courts being taken over and
not going away. The fastest growing sport in the world. It's just amazing. And I said, you have to have goals for yourself. I did that in long driving. I was able to accomplish that. And then they got rid of all the old farts, so I couldn't compete anymore. And so I had to find pickleball, which I did. And I've won some national and world senior events and stuff. And so this year I said, you know, I got to have another goal. So I said, I'm going to play singles. And I'm going to try for the triple crown. Singles, mixed doubles, men's doubles. And so I played in the U.S. Open recently, and I was able to do that in my age gap. So I'm very proud of my goal. Try it two more times and two other big events later in the year. And actually, I'm coming out to do something with the Warriors. They're having a big pickleball event in July, over at the Chase Center, I think, you know, so you know, keep your eye out for that one. I'm going to come out and participate in that because I love it. You know, I got Chris Mullen playing some now. He's working on it. His wife plays all the time. So I told Chris, come on, you got to get your game up, man. We'll partner up and go play some pickleball. So, it's a great sport. And
I will see you there for that. I will definitely come to Chase Center for that, sir. That sounds exciting.
So it'll be fun. Let's get some more of the questions.
Yeah. Here's Con So Rad.
Hey, Rick, this is Conso Rad from Danville, California. Hey, I would have to say the last game with the Warriors against the Kings was a little disappointing. Not surprising, but they were clearly playing against a team that was younger and faster, and changes need to be made. I'm just wondering, what do you think are the two key changes that the Warriors will need to make, maybe three, to get faster and compete? Let me know. Take care.
Well, I don't know necessarily where they were faster and stuff. I mean, the Warriors have some guys that can do something. They just had a bad game. I mean, you know, what would the odds be that you're going to bet that Klay Thompson wouldn't score a point?
Well, that's four straight postseason duds he's laid now. That sucks.
Yeah, I mean, so it was a horrible game, and they know it, and it's just, but that happens. It happens in sports. I mean, it's just the timing of when it happens. But at the most inopportune time possible, because I was kind of excited. They were seeing like they're finally coming together and starting to play some decent basketball, the kind of basketball we hoped they would cause some problems for somebody, and then to lay that egg, that kind of hurt a little bit. So, and that's decisions that have to be made a lot. You know, what does Klay decide to do? Who's going to be available in free agency? How much do the Warriors, are they willing to give up to get somebody? Like you brought up the Giannis situation, what they might have to do for that. Other factors are there. The Paul George situation could be another one that they might want to look at. So, Mike Jr. has got, you know, a lot of things to look at to decide what they're going to try to do for the team. I don't think the team... I think they were a playoff caliber team. I mean, the things that happened during the season, especially Draymond, you know, caused them to miss the playoffs without question. Otherwise, they still would have been a playoff team. And, you know, some of the young people were a nice job, you know, a young player doing some other good things. They certainly could always use another good big guy. I mean, that'd be a factor, I think, if they can find somebody to do that.
And just to add off that, Rick, I mean, like when I look at the Warriors in that one game, to me, bigger picture, I don't. You gotta try and avoid putting yourself in a situation where you're a single elimination game determines your entire season. I think it's unfortunate they were even found themselves in that position as a 10 seed, and that's where all these early season struggles comes back to bite you in the ass. I mean, it is an 82 game season, right? You can't just pretend like the first half didn't exist. It cost them in the whole big picture. But let me ask you this, Rick, and I don't know if you agree with me or not. I feel a lot of optimism in the sense that the young core, the Kuminga, Moody, Pajemski, Trace Jackson Davis, who thankfully was starting toward the end of the season, these four players who all seem to have incredible work ethic. They seem to be high character individuals. They seem to have a feel for the game, as you mentioned, being a very important variable. I think we're going to see improvement from them, and that's going to translate to the product we see on the court. And I'm feeling positive about that, about the rise of those four, and the fact that Steve Kerr did admit, finally, thankfully, in his exit interview, that the team is small. He acknowledges that, and he thinks they should be bigger. So those are my thoughts on it. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I would concur. I mean, that's a fair evaluation of the situation with the Warriors right now. Do you keep the guys that are here and hope they're going to continue to take steps forward and improve? And what's going to happen with Klay is going to be another big factor for them, without question. And then who do they get in the draft? I mean, you know, if they really do a good job and, you know, pick somebody really good, I mean, that could be a factor.
They don't have a first round pick though, Rick. That's it.
You know what? There's more than 20 people, 30 people out there. I mean, you can do some things. I'm just saying, you can find little golden nuggets. I'm talking about getting someone for the bench because you don't win only with six and seven players.
Yes, sir.
To have, you know, eight and nine, you got to go a little deeper now, especially with this, you know, with the load management stuff where your players aren't playing as many minutes. Somebody else has got to play those minutes. And so it's always been a factor that your bench, we've talked about that before. After the Warriors finally won, after 40 years, won. Why? They had two veteran guys willing to come in, you know, Lee and Iguodala, who were willing to go and come off the bench.
Yep. Yes, okay? Sir.
Stuff like that. OK, could be a big factor for you. Your other guys are doing stuff. You get some veterans to say, hey, I think we got a chance to do this. I'm willing to come over here. I'll take a little less money, be on a team that's playing the game the right way, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's all about that, the kind of chemistry that you have and what the overall picture is, not your key three good guys, because we've seen what happened in Phoenix with three good guys. Okay. It's more, it's a team. That's the
Absolutely. And just to add to that, Rick, the Warriors have other players on the roster now, two in particular, Lester Quiñones and Gui Santos. I love what they showed this year. I have high hopes for these two being important bench contributors. And I agree with you. I think Trayce Jackson-Davis earned a starting spot as a center. I don't know if you agree with me or not on that, but they also need reinforcements there. I also think the Warriors can no longer pretend that they can rely on Draymond Green, even if he behaves. I mean, he's going to be 35 years old next year. I mean, you know, and he's that body's not going to hold up forever. So that's, to me, that's two things you could focus on, maybe one thing that solves both is finding someone to reinforce and give you some backup for Trayce Jackson-Davis and or Draymond Green. And that's where if the Warriors stay under the cap, and this is a huge positive that they didn't have this last year as a luxury. Under the new CBA, if you stay under the cap, you can offer players that mid-level exception. Last year was the first time the Warriors could not do that because of the new CBA. They were so far over the cap that they couldn't offer the mid-level exception, and they got burned time and time and again by free agents who the Warriors couldn't offer a penny over the veteran minimum for. And so you had other teams offering just $500,000 more, a million more, to entice other veterans that the Warriors may have been in contention for. Instead, they lost these veterans to other teams. This offseason, if they stay under the cap, you can offer the mid-level exception again. So you can find some good bench pieces that they didn't have the luxury of pursuing last year. So I'm feeling optimistic, but I also feel like that should be a primary area of concern. I know Steve Kerr has mentioned shooting, and I don't doubt shooting is important. But to me, they need some reinforcements down low because Trayce Jackson-Davis and Draymond by themselves are not enough. And I don't know what they have coming off the bench in terms of size. So that's my thoughts.
Well, we know the size didn't hurt them. I mean, they're playing small ball a lot, and they're going to get hurt with that. And so they can certainly use that. And they need to have, the center position because, let's face it, I mean, he did a nice job for them. But they had other personnel to help him. But when you have no offense coming from your center position, that's what happened with the Lakers the season before. I mean, they just packed the middle. I mean, LeBron didn't go out. Nobody guarded. They were guarding the center and your power forward. They weren't guarding him. Yep. They're letting him shoot threes if he wanted to do that. And move. And Kayvon, nobody was guarding him ever out there. And so the Warriors, where do you go? You're trying to go to, how do you drive to the basket and create a problem for a team when they got the center, when they packed the middle?
Absolutely. It's going to be an interesting offseason, Rick. No doubt about that. You want to hear from Tommy Cech?
He's on every time we do it. Constant. Let's go ahead and get a few. We got a couple more we can get. Let's get Tommy.
Okay, let's get for everyone who's already had a clip played. We'll just stick to one for each person. Here's Tommy.
Hi, Rick. Do you anticipate Steph Curry being content finishing his career out with the Warriors, even if they don't get back to contending for a title?
Yeah, I do. I think it would be a great thing in today's world to be able to stay with the same team the entire time. And, the organization's been great to him. You know, he's still going to have Draymond will probably still be here. Clay more than likely will accept it. He'll be with the guys that he spent so much time with. They're, you become like brothers with a terrific fan base. The fans have just been unbelievable to support this team. I don't think, and he's set in, he's got a family, they're in school, the kids, who the heck wants to pick up and do stuff? I don't think he wants to go anyplace else.
Yeah, he's got a nice setup here. He's a god. I mean, I never thought someone would match Joe Montana, and then here comes Steph. I didn't think any Warriors player would surpass you in terms of prominence, and Steph is somehow at least equal to you. It's incredible.
Steph is beyond it. Steph is special. I mean, he's a... Yeah. Been anybody like Steph play the point guard position? There's never been anybody shoot the ball like him, and he's a good person. He does a lot of really good things. And the thing I love about Steph is that when he puts his uniform on, you're getting his best effort.
Yes, wholeheartedly agree with you. I guess what, two more, maybe three more. Here's Jim Darby.
Yeah.
Hey Rick, I have a question for you. This is Jim Darby. Teams, don't last forever. And obviously you guys, Warriors back in the 70s, had somewhat of a mini dynasty going, but then it just started to come apart. The Warriors kind of face that situation now. How does that feel for a player, particularly an older guy on a team, when that starts happening?
Good question.
I appreciate the question, but I don't think we're ever a mini dynasty. We should have won two championships in a row. I mean, I'll go to my grave just dying about that. I can see the plays that took place like they happened yesterday.
Oh,
but anyway,
they haunt you. Look at them, they haunt you still. These years later. Wow.
All the bad stuff freaking haunts me. I mean,
I'm with you, brother. I'm with you, Rick. I feel you. I feel you. I know I'm not at the same level, but I feel you.
It happened yesterday, but the bottom line is that you want to know and you want to stay and be competitive. And when you're older and stuff, instead, especially if you have a family, it's not easy to pick up and move. I had to do that and move away and my family stay. It's not easy. And I would think most players would probably want to feel comfortable staying where they are. I don't, as we just talked about, I don't think the Warriors, those guys want to break up. In fact, I heard Draymond say the other day something. He said, I think they're going to want to keep us around. We've been such an important part of what we're doing, keep us together. And I think they will. I think they'll make the opportunity for him, that whether or not Clay accepts that offer, because, you know, Steph is there and Draymond, hopefully they will. And hopefully they add the little other pieces that that are necessary to help them. It kind of reminds me what the Warriors are doing is kind of what San Antonio did for that stretch of time when they were there. They won, then they didn't, then they won, and they kept themselves up there. Not many teams have done that. The Celtics did that. The Lakers in the 90s did that. And then the Warriors during here, and San Antonio, and then the Warriors. So the teams have kind of done that. And the Warriors still have a chance to hang in there. I don't know if anybody's going to ever be as proficient and as successful as the Warriors have been during the stretch of time that they've done that in modern day now. I don't know if anybody's going to pull that off, but they're not done. I don't think they're done if the right moves are made and everybody stays together and stays healthy because of the experience that, and when you have players of the caliber, especially, Steph and Clay, who can come in and put 20 up on the board, you know, before you blink your eyes a few times and used judiciously and effectively, and if the younger players continue to improve and they do get some of the backup people, another big guy, whoever may be pulled, get some veteran player or somebody to come to the team to help and be somebody on the bench. There's still a chance. So I'm hopeful that that's going to be the case. I don't think you're going to go through a 13-year period. I know when I left the Warriors went 13 years without making the playoffs. Okay. And I tried to tell you, I said, well, I guess I wasn't as big a problem as somebody said I was. Anyway.
Whoever said that, they're an idiot. Two more. You got the energy for two more? Yeah.
John.
I'm saying again. I'm sorry.
Don't we have John?
Well, and there's Wick as well. I don't know if we played. Did we already hear from Tim from Danville?
No. Yeah. No. Go ahead. Let's go.
All right. Two more. I was just trying to get to at least everyone gets one in.
Hey, Rick. This is Tim from Danville. Yo, it seems like there's so many teams now that are so far ahead of the Warriors that people you never even heard of score 40, 45 points. What are the Warriors? How many players away are the Warriors to get back to where they're relevant again? It just seems to me like they're so far behind now. What's your opinion on that? Thanks, Rick.
I don't, to be honest with you, I mean, they were playing they're towards the end of the season and playing the kind of basketball they're capable of playing, especially defensively, where they had some struggles and all. And if you make that commitment and you do that defensively, which keeps you in the games when offense is struggling some, I don't think they're that far behind. I don't think there's that many teams that are that much better than they are, that they have no chance to win. I'm pretty sure that, you know, Steph and Clay, and when they stepped on the court, they probably had confidence that they could win if they played their brand of basketball for extended periods of time. The problem is the hardest thing to do as an athlete is to stay focused and learn how to do that, especially for younger players. This is why you see teams, just look at how many times you've watched it happen. Teams got an 18, 20 point lead. And next thing you know, the game is tied or they wind up losing. And that's lost the focus. Okay. Because what you have to understand is that usually you take a timeout. Guys, we're up 18 points. Understand this. We actually have to play better than we played to get the lead in order to maintain this lead. These guys are going to come out and give everything they have to get back into this game. So if we don't match their intensity and their focus, they're going to chip away and get back in the game and get confidence. And then God forbid that all of a sudden we go a little bit cold and we stop doing. Never stop doing what you were doing to get your lead and never think that the game is under control. That's easy to say, not easy to get players to do that. And each player individually has to find out in his makeup, what do I need to do to keep my head in the game mentally? Mm-hmm. Physically, a coach can get, you know, if you don't play hard, he's going to take you out of the game. But it's the mental thing. It's that half a step late. And as I told you, in basketball, a half a step, you're toast.
Done. Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't have to get by my guy. Half a step, I own him. Get him on my shoulder. So if you're not in the game and focused properly, your reaction time is just a little bit off, and just a little bit is a half a step, and a half a step is history. You're done. And so that's the hardest part. And the Warriors, I think, you know, the brand of basketball that Steve tries to have them play, pass, move, cut, do all those good things, that's fun basketball to watch. It's fun to play that way. And it's a way that you're going to have success if defensively you're helping each other, not giving the other team easy opportunities. Don't give up fast break easy opportunities. Don't give second chances all of the time to do that. Make sure that you know who the personnel are. If a guy's a shooter and stuff, you know, jumping screens and taking the 3-point, not going under and giving the guy a chance to get a 3-pointer, not being silly enough to go when the weak side stuff's happened, you drop all the way in on the weak side towards the paint and they throw a cross court pass to a guy who's a shooter. Never leave that shooter. You never leave a shooter. You stay up on the shooter. And so if you just play smart, intelligent basketball, you can keep yourself into games. And so I think the Warriors have a chance to do something next year, depending upon who they keep and who they bring in. And we'll evaluate. You can evaluate that if we're still doing this next year or this next season, not next year, next season.
And I'm glad you brought up the focus, because defensively, what drove me crazy watching it this year, and I don't know if you felt the same way, were all the open threes that other teams were taking. There were so many damn open threes that other teams had. Those open looks drove me crazy. And I don't know if
that's the focus in the defense. I mean, that's the thing that's crazy. I saw some guy rant about Joe get rid of the coach for the Celtics because of how they played so poorly when they lost that game. Hey, you don't think that the coach is telling them to do the right things? He's not the guy on the floor that's making stupid plays out there. You don't think that they're working on that in practice and talking about it all the time? So, again, the coaches get way too much criticism, and a lot of times they get way too much credit, okay?
That's fair.
Situation. I mean, so let's just be honest about it. So, yeah, it's interesting. Defense is all about focus. Really, really about the focus and being in the right position, right place, and understanding the situation. And the game is a game of mistakes. Every sporting event is a game of mistakes. A lot of mistakes happen in every game that you play. The team that makes the fewest mistakes generally wins the game. So in basketball, a bad pass, that's a mistake, right? A foul, that's a mistake. Missed shot is a mistake. I mean, not getting back on defense, you know, for a transition back, that's a mistake. Not screening your guy off the board, that's a mistake. And so they compound one another, and you just can't afford to do that. And it really is disturbing to me when I see players sometime with the ball, and a guy has the ball, he dribbles up the court, and he drives all the way in and gets a layup. What the hell? I mean, there is no way that any time in any game ever should a player who's out at the top of the key and the defense is set, be able to drive all the way to the basket. You always have to stop the progress of the basketball. I mean, anyway, that's why I watch these games and I hear the stuff that's being said and the comments that are being made. I'm saying, you know, what are you talking about? I mean, come on. The game is not a complicated game. There's only five people on the floor at the same time. How many different combinations can you have? It's not 11 players like a football game that you have, and you have all these players taking place, and you have to do this, and you got to do that. And it's for the no, there's only five guys, and generally it's on one side of the floor. I mean, come on. And what's your philosophy? Are we going to force teams left? Are we going to force them to the middle? Are we going to double team this guy? There's all these little things, and if you're focused and staying in the game, you keep doing these things correctly. But when you lose your focus, all of a sudden you don't do the things that you know you're supposed to do. And the next thing you know, you're giving opportunities to the other team to get easy baskets. I mean, how many times do you see it? A guy comes flying in and gets this amazing slam dunk on a rebound. Somebody didn't screen him off the boards. Okay? Stuff like that. I mean, it's pretty damn simple.
By the way, 27 seconds left. Knicks lead by 5. 95.
Okay.
Oh, did you not want to know that? Did I screw that up? I'm sorry.
You didn't screw me up. That's okay. Fine.
Okay. Last comment is from our colleagues with Mic'd Up.
Rick and Cyrus, are the officials professional officials, or are they like the NFL where they're professional officials, but they actually have day jobs also?
Well, they get paid a lot of money, so I think that they're just officials. I mean, they're making hundreds of dollars.
I think what John Rieger is asking is, are NBA officials full-time employees, or are they like the NFL where they're
full-time employees, but they're getting paid during the course of the season and playoffs if they qualify to do the playoffs, because not everybody gets to the playoffs.
Right.
And so they're paid X number of dollars per season. I think they make extra if they get playoff opportunities. So, and they make a lot of money. I mean, they're making a lot of money. I would assume that they're not, they may have other things that they do during the offseason or things of that nature, but I think that's their choice. But I don't think they're full-time yearly employees of the NBA. I don't believe so. We could always look into that, but that's my guess.
But and just to follow up there, I do think there's a difference, though. Like, I don't think NBA officials, you're right, they could be doing other things in the offseason, but I think this is their primary focus. Whereas with NFL officials, oftentimes they are doing other jobs.
Games. I mean, how much money can you make? I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, it's a nice gig to have, but, and it's only from, you know, when they start their season. I mean, they're done in, you know, when they don't get to the playoffs and stuff, they're done in December, right? Started in what, August or September?
Exactly. Much smaller window. Many less games.
All right, let's get the last one.
No, that was it. Unless you want to hear from someone again, but that was all everyone at least got one comment in.
Okay, that's great. We got all the people we have to get, so that's good. Go for a good bike ride with my wife and maybe take a little whirlpool and stuff. And
oh, hey now.
Mention the next part, but let's go.
Hey now. I'm a sucker for jacuzzis, world. I am just, you throw one of those in my face and I'm not doing anything else. So
well, wait. When do you get to be my age? And if you think it feels good now, wait. You get to be older.
Rick, we went almost 2 hours today, and it didn't feel like it at all. Thank you, sir. This is always a pleasure for me. Thanks.
Yeah, it's just fun to talk about. I mean, this sport has been so good to me. I'm so blessed, and, you know, getting the chance to watch my son. It's just been such a joy. Let me tell you, their win in this Masters event, for the first event of the FIBA 3x3 World Tour, was a miraculous victory. I mean, and Jim referred that to 2 game-winning shots, and my son played really great at the end of 2 of the important games. And so it's just so much fun to watch him play. But I'm telling you, if you follow the game and do it, 3x3 is so unpredictable. There is no way in hell I thought they were going to win either of those 2 games that they wound up winning. It was almost, it was miraculous. It really was. So I'm really happy for him. Plus he made some money, which is good. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's always good. Yeah. All right.
Anyway, have a great week coming up. Hope the teams that you're rooting for in the playoffs, you know, do well for you. And it's always nice to catch up. So God bless everybody. We'll see you. I'm going to say goodbye.